Anyway, I was going to talk about one of the aspects of training is a lot of practice comes down to paying in detail what you're doing. And I was even kind of thinking of it in terms of, you know, I was looking at a lecture, some notes I had on it, and a good example of how is looking just to see how honest you are. You know, just looking at it. Because it's funny how easy it is for all of us, if we're not paying attention, to be dishonest. I was even thinking, like, I'm into a meeting with some monks, and it was something about the robes, and one of the temples said, oh, this is just too much work to do all of this. We just don't have the time to do it. So one of the monks from one of the other temples came by and said, well, if you don't have time to do that, I'll sew them for you. He said, oh, no, we can sew them. So it wasn't, you know, in a way, it was, he just didn't like the idea of, he didn't want to bother with it. It really wasn't the time. It was, you know, and it's important to be, you know, if you don't have time, that's one thing. Be honest. Say, I don't want to bother with this. You know, I just don't think this is important enough to bother, rather than say, we don't have time to do it. Or it's like I was talking to another monk, and she's kind of a bit strong opinioned on health things and supplements and all the rest. And I mentioned how they had, like, the study showing how if you took one vitamin, actually, that showed instead of helping for cancer, it increased the cancer risk.
Makes the tumor healthier.
Yeah. It does. And what the doctor said is that people don't seem to realize that things that can be helpful can be more healthful for the tumor, which is part of you too. So just eating well may help the tumor more than the tumor's defenses. And the monk kind of goes, oh, that isn't a good study and all of this. And I said, now, tell me, if that didn't agree with your opinion but was on the other side, would you feel that way? And she looked at me kind of sheepishly and said, and, you know, and kind of caught the fact that, yes, you know, was willing to kind of admit that probably if it agreed with her opinion, she wouldn't have said that. But when it disagrees with your opinion, and you can see in politics, people do this all the time. Somebody had a cute story of kind of where one of the conservative commentators kind of okayed, like, Sarah Palin, vice presidential candidate, you know, teenage daughter is pregnant. So, and a lot of commentators said it isn't really appropriate to discuss, you know, it's a private issue, blah, blah, blah. And then they quote him ripping into somebody else because their teenage daughter had saying, no, that's an indictment of your value, you know, in this whole list. And you realize, okay, you know, that very word, double standard. And just to see what is it that we're doing, you know, and unless we study in detail, look carefully, and try to see the way we distort reality, the way our opinions and all get in the way, we don't actually see very clearly what we're doing, and we're seeing this fog of, like you get in this whole political campaign is a good example of it, as we're going into the final stretch of seeing everyone looking through things with this sharply colored viewpoint and light, where it's almost, you know,
it's really easy to fall into. I caught myself tuning into channels like 60, for instance, that where most of what was said agreed with what I said and had the polls that I liked to, you know, I liked. And then flipped another channel and they're interviewing the other candidate. And, oh, that's very annoying. I think I'll flip back to the other one. And then I said, wait a minute, you know, you're trying to get a balanced view, so.
Yeah, and it's kind of annoying that the media has become so polarized, too, where, you know, you get channels that have clear political slants, which is sort of depressing, you know, it's kind of...
On both sides.
On both sides, yeah, they are. There is a clear, you know, clear slant, you know, it's like they're not giving, you know, and you kind of get... And you can't help having a slant in the sense that's part of, you know, we're going to have a viewpoint, it's going to have an influence on us. It's not like you can be, there's no such thing as being objective. What you're trying to be is less subjective, not thinking, yo, I'm completely objective. No, you can't be. Nobody, nothing is completely objective about anything. But you can try to notice, like I'm pointing out in those cases, where you're not being consistent. Where, and all you have to do is substitute. If the other side did this, would you? What would you do? What would you say? How would you approach it? You know, if if Barack Obama's daughter isn't old enough, but if they were old enough and they had pregnant, would you be so blasé about it? And to understand, we have to have both try to be honest, but honesty actually requires compassion, so we can actually see the fact that we're opinionated without it getting to be a problem. See the ways we're dishonest, much more importantly, about ourselves, our motives. Again, why am I doing what am I doing? Can we see our motives clearly? Can we see why we're making choices clearly? Can we see the way we excuse, generalize? Can we see the way we blame? Blame ourselves, blame others. Can we see the ways we're not being open about something? Which is a way dishonest. We're hiding aspects. You know, almost the way we want to hide our flaws and show our virtues. Actually, if you think about it, that's being dishonest. You know, we want people to think we're better than we actually really are. Which, if you think about it, isn't that what we're often doing? And it takes compassion and trust, which we're developing by training. You don't do this. You do it by looking at each little piece of the self and trusting that this is okay. And actually, honesty. Honesty doesn't mean always saying. It's like I listen to somebody who for some reason would even written an interview with somebody who even writes books on this thing where he would just take some point of view and just try to do it. Like he had a point of view, I'll be completely honest and say for the next month whatever comes into my head. And of course, you can imagine what what the consequences of that was. Particularly he kind of mentioned, like, you know, his wife. Do I look fat in this?
Oh, yeah. Maintenance
day.
No, dear.
A lot of it's predicated on wishful thinking too, like going back to the candidates. You know, I get into this back and forth thing and I lean towards one candidate, but it's really based on wishful thinking. I'm hoping that the candidate that I favor actually has some idea of what he's doing, but you know, it's not necessarily true, and or that he'll get into office, if he gets into office, that he'll do what he says he's going to do, which they almost never do. But it's a lot of wishful thinking, and I mean, I've been catching myself a lot lately, saying of finding these wishful thinking things that I'm predicating this whole viewpoint on, not just politics but other things too. That, well, you know, if I invest my dwindling 401k over here, well, you know, this is going to turn around and suddenly I'll be back in duck soup. You know,
duck soup?
Yeah, ducks like soup.
You should be like that.
Ground chill marks. Duck soup.
I think we have to be out and look at ourselves and the world. It's a very important thing. The nice thing is the truth and honesty points us to the truth. And I can give you a good example. It's like, it's very rare when somebody, let's say, comes in for spiritual counseling and is really honest that it turns out to be wrong, if you know what I mean. It's like, well, I was too open. You know, yet there's strong reasons we don't do that, because it's hard to be open, it's hard to trust, it's hard to look, but it's very rare somebody actually at the end of it, because usually it's a relief just to say what, you know, what's in your heart, what's going on. But on the other hand, it's hard to do, just like there's a reason why we don't want to look at ourselves clearly. It's painful. We don't want to look at the world clearly because it's not the way we want it to be. or we want to just blame the world, like, oh God, these people. And the whole point of training is to purify our hearts, to see what, to purify, you have to first be willing to see what's there, which is honest. Then you can cleanse your karma by seeing, I don't want to be this way. I want to be, you know, I remember reading a remark where there was this blind kind of psychic in Japan who could just listen to people's voices and almost say what's in their heart. And he said, like of this great Zen master, Bankei, says, when Bankei speaks, you know that he means exactly what he says. And he says, almost nobody ever does that, where you just don't feel there's a mask or a filter or anything else that you have what you're there, which is actually what we all would like to be and what we like in people. Is, and we all can realize for good reasons we've created things to we can hide behind. You know, so where you don't have to be honest because I don't like this about me. I'll hide it. I don't want people to know this. I don't want to be. And there are contexts where it's not, you know, it's not like you have to tell everybody or be open in, like, bare your heart to whoever. In fact, I used to, one of my jobs at Shasta often was to arrange, you know, to organize almost all the contact with everybody outside, you know, the monastery. And we would have these open houses, and hundreds of people would come through. Literally 400 people in a day frequently would come through the open house. I would be kind of arranging this to happen and with people to have tours for everybody. And people would say, like, what do you say? I say, actually, remember, don't say too much. Don't open your heart on these tours. That's not being dishonest. There's no point in telling people. You know, because some of them are going to go, oh, God, why do you do that type of, you know what I mean? It's like, most of them aren't interested, you know, it's not useful to be open in that context. Just like, you know, I won't tell everybody, you know, like what I often like giving an example of that is people ask me why I'm a monk, and I'll say, you know, and often I don't want to get into why I'm a monk with somebody who has no clue why anybody would be a monk. You know, I'll say, because that's what I wanted to do. And they'll look at me like, okay, you didn't, that sounds like a politician's answer. You know, I could be Sarah Palin. You know, who finds a way of not answering questions. But it's like, it's not really, that's not the openness I'm talking about. It's in the right context where it is, you know, where it is, and that's one of the reasons to take refuge in the Sangha. So there's places where it's safe to be open, where somebody isn't going to jump down your throat when you make a mistake, or, you know, and that's the kind of key thing is, you know, will people, you know, can be who they are. And it's, you know, and actually one of the sweet things at the Abbey is often somebody would make some major mistake, you know, make a complete mess of something, do something really awful, and you would kind of feel, oh God, they're going to be in so much trouble and all the rest. And then they would talk to Reverend Master kind of and come out of it, and sometimes they were in a better position before than they were before the mistake, because somehow Reverend Master got a feeling they really learned something from that and was actually really helped them actually, you know, to make the mistakes. I remember one monk where he did some, really made a complete mess of things and really actually was being really critical of Reverend Master Jiyu and even working with some other monks in a way to undermine her in some subtle ways. And then he finally admitted to her what he was doing. And he said, instead of being in trouble, suddenly he was writing the rules on what you should do when somebody makes that mistake. You know, kind of a good, skillful way of approaching. Because she thought, we should have rules against kind of what you just did. So, okay, write up the rules for this. And he kind of goes, instead of being in trouble, suddenly I'm... You know, and that would often happen because it didn't really matter. You know, it's really how you approached it that, and after a while, you know, and somehow you could trust that in a way. You know, if you were willing to take responsibility, there wasn't a big problem almost no matter what you did. You just had to take the karmic consequence that there might be some karma for it. But it wasn't a big deal as long as you were willing to take responsibility for it. you know, if you weren't, then again, that's that honesty. You know, if you don't, oh no, I didn't make this mistake. You know, and I've been around people like that. It's like, you know, it's almost like they're squirming. You know, they made the mistake, but they're trying to find a way out. Like, yeah. It can't be my fault. And, you know, it's like, God, that isn't a good rule. That's not good. Is it really bad? Maybe this case is exceptional. God, I was in such, you know, and you're kind of, it's almost like they're flipping through all the options of how can I absolve myself of full responsibility. And you get somebody who just says, wow, I utterly blew it. I'll accept the consequences, whatever it is. And it's willing just to go back, you know, and accept, okay, whatever trouble I'm in, I'm in. That's the consequence of making the mistake. You know, and there's a huge difference. And once they do that, you almost don't need the consequence. You know, once you're willing to, you know, almost be like a criminal who, you know, kind of, you know, and it was almost like we have a book downstairs, you know, translation of that the Abbey published, Beyond the Pale of Vengeance, which is about somebody who used to murder and rob and murder people, got involved with this kind of woman who wasn't together, and they did it. And finally, he recognized what he was doing, got really appalled, and rushed away and kind of went to a temple, goes to the Buddhist monk and says, God, look what I just did, and makes a full confession and says, okay, I guess I should go to the authorities, and this is in medieval Japan, and just say what I did. And the monk said, all they're going to do is hang you. That seems like an utter waste. Why don't you become a monk and see how much good you can do? You know, so the fellow, you know, becomes a monk and, you know, kind of comes to a road that's actually around through this mountain pass that was so treacherous, people were dying all the time taking this road. He says, we need to carve a tunnel so people don't die. You know, it's, you know, and the story goes, you know, it took him like 20, 30 years, you know, to kind of do the tunnel, and people, you know, let him almost do it for 10 years because it was such a huge job. They thought, this is undoable. And after 10 years, they realized, you know, he got somewhere in 10 years. Maybe it's doable, and started finally to help him. And
they kind of thought he was nuts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because, you know, you're doing something that's by yourself you can't even do. And he just decided, I'll spend his life doing this. And there was actually a real-life monk who did it, but he didn't kill people first. But who actually got the tunnel made. It's just the story. It's a fictional story. Beyond the Pale of Vengeance. It's not. The monk who did it wasn't. Yeah?
My understanding is that's a true story. I've seen photographs of the tunnel.
There is a monk who got the tunnel. He just wasn't a murderer.
Oh.
And so the story isn't true, but there was a monk who got it done. But he raised the money and was a regular monk and didn't spend all the time carving it himself. For, you know, it was his thing to get it done. So he put it all his time and spent, you know, many years getting it done. But he didn't murder people and he didn't literally carve it himself. You know, it was mostly he got it done. And so it was, you know, it's still an amazing thing to do. This monk who decided to get this tunnel made in medieval Japan, and it got
still
made.
Digging through a mountain by hand.
So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it took, you know, and it took him years to raise the money and get the thing, you know, get it done, and it took a long, long time to get it done. So it's still a very impressive story that he got it done, but
was this kind of a myth that built up around this, or how did this story, you know?
I think somebody just wrote it as a story. I don't know. You know, I mean, the real story's known. I mean, it's in the, you know, it's actually, even in the book that we published, you know, they give the real account to, I believe, in the foreword. You know, it's in some of the translations of it. But it's very important to bring all of this honesty into the stillness of meditation, where we want to be honest and just see what is there, and the compassion that can allow us to accept what is there that is revealed in honesty. And it's a slow process just to open up to seeing things, you know, just to seeing clearer what it is that we're doing, how it is that we're essentially being dishonest often, how we're stretching the truth. And a good example is just think of how easy it is for us to complain, criticize, ourselves, others. There's a dishonesty there. Why are we bring it into meditation, bring it into the practice that kind of says it's okay what's unfolding here? And why are we, in a way, lying to ourselves and telling ourselves it's not okay? You know, why are we holding on to that lie, which is where the dishonesty comes from? You know, where we don't even see it. We're so blinded by our opinions, like the talking heads on a lot of the shows in politics, where they don't even see, you know, how much they would not say the same thing to the other side. You know, how unfair they are. And to see how we don't trust ourselves, you know, which is very important. You know, trust the fact that our karma's okay. And try to... And that's a slow, gradual process. One of the things about training is this isn't something you do by hearing, wow, Reverend Kinray says to do this. This is something you do by practice. This is the practice to try to be more honest. You know, and it's a continuum of trying to do better, not how do I do this, but how do I be more honest and more honest, see a bit more. Can't see everything. You can see a bit more. Let me see through this opinion. Let me sit still and just see how I'm just filled with stuff. You know, kind of like the story where of the monk having tea with somebody who's just talking nonstop and venting opinions, which is not an unusual experience. And he's filling his teacup up, and the fellow... And he keeps filling the teacup until it's overflowing. He goes, why are you doing this? He says, well, I feel like I'm with somebody who is just overflowing with opinions. and doubt, despair, fear, boredom, they're all ways of telling us that we're telling ourselves a lie. We're complaining about something. We're trying not to be where we are. Tell yourself the truth. This is a life of Buddha in front of ourselves. We have to keep... Although we can say, well, that's just a religious lie to myself since I don't know it. You're having faith in the truth, in the teaching. You know, you're trusting that where it's pointing to is real, while my opinions, which is the opposite, but no, my opinion is this is a mess. We're trying to trust the Buddha's opinions rather than our opinions. You know, we're trusting the Dharma rather than what we are telling ourselves. And that's just to remind yourself, just to let go and try to see what's there. The opinion isn't that it's any specific thing. The opinion is to let go that overlay that we're doing. You know, I don't have to say, wow, this is a wonderful... I'm not saying this is great, marvelous, wonderful... You know, just like if the election doesn't go my way, I'm not going to say, wow, it's so wonderful this person got elected. Just realize, okay, I'm filled with my opinions. Let go and try to trust. The life of Buddha's, the wheel of the Dharma rolls constantly and lacks for nothing, yet needs something. You know, and the wheel of the Dharma will continue to roll. How do I get out of the way of it? And by complaining about reality, it doesn't work very well. You know, to point myself to letting go of those opinions and just being wholeheartedly there with what's going on and pointing myself to trust actually works. You know, when I do it, it feels better. When I don't do it, like, I gripe to myself for a while. It's amazing how my... reality becomes kind of depressing. And it's not like I'm telling myself how wonderful everything is. I'm just not complaining. You know, you don't have to... I'm not saying I'm feeling great. Just not... Oh, I feel lousy. That's okay, Kinray. You know, I want to strangle this person. That's okay. It'll come and go. It's a Buddha. Strangling Buddhas isn't good policy. Criticizing Buddhas aren't good policy. You know, I've seen that person, I've liked that person. Nice person. Nice cat. Even when she wakes me up. Nice cat. She hasn't been doing that much, but it's one of those things I have very little. My willingness at 3 in the morning isn't high when I get woken up. So it's like... just okay, what do you do now? This is a lot more filled than you usually want at my Moochie.
Moved to new heights here.
Yeah. She'll find a little seam. We're not going back. We're not pretending our patterns aren't there, our feelings aren't there. But we're using trying to be still and bring ourselves to the mind of meditation to understand what's going on here, to be honest. What's going on? Where is this? I have this negative feeling. How's it happening? You know, where's this boredom coming from? Where's this fear coming from? Where's this coming from? And how do I, you know, what am I doing here? And it takes willingness and faith to look at it. And faith actually just that we can do something about whatever's wrong. You know, it's like something seems unclean. Well, the practice is, okay, that's part of the practice. It can be cleansed. You know, rather than just thinking this is the fixed way reality is, which we can often do. You know, and people often say, God, they can't even imagine being different. Well, that's true. And we're just like when I'm angry, I can't imagine not... You know, when I'm having any strong thing, it's hard to picture not being it. And that's true of lifelong patterns. They can all change when we want them to do. It just means it'll take a lot of time and patience and willingness to change. And when we view anything with distaste and repulsion, you know, we're adding a layer to reality. You know, we're... you know, a kind of this fog of a judgmental, critical point of view on things. Yet it takes a lot of work, you know, and that's the thing about training is it's a you know, the very word practice, training. Because all these patterns are strongly ingrained. Just think of looking at yourself. Think of how strong a lot of the patterns are. You know, I am this, I am that. You know, and... I feel this way. This bothers me. I'm sorry. So I remember one you know, and all those patterns can change if we practice. And we have to be willing to embrace the ways that we color things and just kind of go, okay, it's good to know that we can practice with all this. You know, this is the stuff of practice. God, if I saw everything clearly, there's no reason to practice. Everything's in the Buddha. You know, just like I don't need to do anything. The fact that things are difficult, wow, how do I put up with this? You know, I don't like people dying. It's not an uncommon sentiment. Okay, again, that's the fog of way we want reality to be. Let go of it. Birth and death are nirvana itself. You know, as it says in the animal funeral in ordination, we ordained Judy's cat the other day, Scylla, and from the beginning there's neither birth nor death. Because of the accumulation of karma, you receive the body of an animal. Discard this karmic body quickly and enter the world of purity. Well, that applies to us. You know, due to delusion, we have this karmic body. You know, and we think, God, this is a great karmic body. And then it gets old. It's not such a great karmic body, but it's my karmic body. It's what I know. It's like, you know, that's my cat's karmic body. you know, don't hold on. That's not reality. You know, if it is, it comes and goes. You know, we point ourselves and part of us doesn't believe that. Part of us, I am reality. Well, not from another point of view, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Trust that there's something deeper. The Buddhas and ancestors, you know, Koho Zenji when he was dying and he asked the kesa to be put on his head, you know, did that because he knew there was nothing to fear. In fact, even Sekhem Sengho, ordained Reverend Master, decided when to die. You know, he had an operation for stomach cancer. And apparently it was successful. He was supposed to be okay. Called all his disciples in his hospital room and said, he's decided it's time for him to go home. And he got into full lotus position and died. You know, and he was only in his, you know, he wasn't that old. He was in his 60s. He just decided, okay, it's his time to go. You know, and his purpose isn't there. And the clear thing is there's a sense of knowing what reality is. You know, what can be lost. And the funny thing about training is the honesty that allows us to face our fear, inadequacies, all the things we don't like. The resistance that we all have. When we face it, it starts to fade when we stop protecting the self. When we build stronger and kind of try to pretend that it's not there, it keeps binding us and we feel that restriction. Just like when you want to hide who you are, it's very uncomfortable. I speak from experience. You know, it's very uncomfortable trying to kind of pretend about things. To want people, you know, having a niggling feeling, are they really seeing me? Or am I getting away with fooling them? And and it's one of the great amazing ironies of life that to be honest and take responsibility for the self and see it as it is and take responsibility for its faults and weaknesses is the thing in a way that we dread, but it's the thing that brings us true peace and freedom, because then those walls can dissolve. You know, unless we're honest, how can they dissolve? We don't even want to look. We want to pretend it's the other side's fault, almost like the politicians keep all doing. Oh, the financial crisis is their fault. And, you know, and it's amazing. When I listen to either sides right now talk about it, they're both lying. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're basically telling things that are clearly not true just so they can blame somebody, which they've convinced themselves is true, but it actually, when they really take any objective look at it, it isn't true. That it's a complete mess. That's God, almost everybody's been, you know, it's like it's hard to find who isn't in, you know, the responsibility permeates so many sectors of our country. It even goes in all of us who thought our houses couldn't lose value. Like, duh. Like, what in the whole world only goes up and doesn't come down? And you think about that. Suddenly homes became that. Why? They never were before. But and each time we, be honest, we'll see ourselves complaining, despairing, fearing, doubting. We should look in detail. How are we getting caught? Be honest. Look at your own heart. Try to see where this is coming from. Try to see how you created this box to put yourself in, that you're despairing, you're feeling inadequate, you're fearing. And trust that, although it's a lot of work, and that's the flip side is that people often say, God, this is, you know, or, you know, or I've been doing this for a while, it's still there. Well, it takes a lot of. This is all really hard stuff. You know, you didn't kind of box yourself in, or as the Buddha, the main image the Buddha always uses, oh, the house builder of the house of self. And on his enlightenment, he said, oh, house builder, thou art seen. Thou shalt build this house no more. It takes a lot of work not to build that house. You know, what's propping you up? What are you clinging like for dear life? You know, which aspect of yourself, if it kind of gets propped out, would you feel like your whole world's collapsing? And try to be honest and see that. And then you can work at, you know, those main pillars. You know, those things that you think are so vital and that you often are convinced that, you know, and realize some of this, from a Buddhist point of view, takes more than one, you know, takes lifetimes. You know, the Buddha, you know, had good karma. He had trained before, you know, kind of to say, wow, unless I see the results in the next year, or I remember like smiling with one monk who very nicely said, I'll give it 5 years. And literally spent 5 years as a monk and left on the really right on the fifth year, you know. And then went out and made hundreds of millions of dollars. But, and I remember reading an article about him, and he was miserable. The article even wrote how he's really not doing very well, even though he managed to make a lot of money. In one of these long, long New Yorker articles, for those who ever read the New Yorker, where they run articles, it can be like 30, you know, you, only magazine that runs these endless articles, and this was one of those profiles where I kind of read it just because, God, somebody, don't know too many people who have profiles in the New Yorker, so, even though I didn't actually literally know this person, he left right before I got to the Abbey, but I heard so many stories about him that, because when you go into a little community and somebody had been there for 6 years, and right before you, everybody's always, oh, we were doing this together, or, you know, you kind of feel like you almost know the person because you've heard so much about them.
River Master.
Yeah.
I guess I find that, I mean, on the one hand, that if I'm not building this house or spinning the story, then, you know, it's an imperfect house, but it's my house, and I guess I feel anxious. Okay, if there's not the structure that I'm building, the story that I'm generating, then what?
Well, that's part of it, is that as you let go and you practice with that, it actually feels right, which is one of those confirmations about training, that if you do it, you start feeling lighter. You realize, rather than protecting you, this is the load we're carrying. I mean, this is where our worries come from. You know,
right.
Just like, you know, think of our, you know, the classic one right now, 401k plans. You know.
201ks?
401ks. Oh, I thought by now they're 201ks. Retirement plans. Our retirement money or whatever, our savings, all the rest. And you realize, you know, that's, you know, we're carrying that around with us. We don't even know what it means. You know, it's like, you know, when we were, and to let go of carrying the stuff around and actually to have what we need in our hearts, which are the training points you to. But again, it's a hard thing to do, and we have to keep letting go. It's almost like you have to keep letting go and being open. Keep letting go and being open and trying to trust that works. And you'll get confirmation it works, but not always that immediately, not each time. But it's like, it's almost like you do a day retreat. It doesn't often feel like you've done something, but at the end of the day, you kind of go, wow, that feels better than it did before. Just like coming here, you know, hopefully sometimes we'll feel better than not coming. You know what I mean? That there's something solid and real, and it resonates in your heart that it's true. And when you do it, you realize it's true. Letting go of my self-importance is real. Very feels really good, you know, to give, not to take, not to criticize, not to get judgments. You know, just like think about the election. trusting that. It's in the hands of the Buddha.
I guess that's the leap that's hard, is the faith that, you know, I don't know and I can't really know, you know, beyond this world that I've, you know, kind of built, and so you just kind of step off into.
Well, that's normal, but you do it, again, you don't do it, we all would like to make a great leap, you just do it slowly and consistently in those subtle ways of, again, you know, what I do, like, you know, with the political campaign, because I am fairly opinionated, and I suddenly see myself filling with opinions. It's there, you know, just like I do have, and just to keep letting go and reminding myself, you know, if the worst happens, it's okay, you know, whatever it is, and I mean, whatever the situation is, I always remind myself, let it fall apart. If it falls apart, I'll work hard to keep it together. If it falls apart, that's okay. That's not the real thing. When that's true of everything, and you kind of keep bringing it in, and it keeps helping, you know, it's kind of chipping away at this self, and at points things wash away. You know, you keep washing, you keep cleaning, just like you're trying to think, how do I do my training perfectly? And Dogen had a great line I always like. He said, You clean a dirty robe with dirty water. You know, our motives aren't pure. Nothing is pure. But it still makes the robe cleaner. You know, you keep cleaning and everything gets cleaner. And you just keep doing it. And you don't worry that you're not doing it perfectly or you're not doing it. And the practice works. And you, in a way, know that. That's why, you know, most people are practicing. You know, it all turns out okay, you know, if we're willing to do it. And it's hard, and it takes, you know, we have to keep seeing and being honest, seeing, okay, this is where the problem is, and moving the problem into our own heart and realizing that's where the problem is and that's where I can fix it. You know, I can't control the election, I can't control others, I can't control Mucci. I can only control me. You know, I can work on me, and that'll be, I can see everything as the Buddha, no matter what it is, even if, you know, 3 a.m. she's screaming. You know, it's the call of the Buddha, okay? It's okay not to sleep at night. You know, I mean, it's not a problem when you do it. I mean, it happened last night for me without her saying, doing anything. Anyway, it's probably about time to end. Nice everyone could be here.
Thank you.